Malachy. I am an oral health epidemiologist in Florida at the Florida Department of Health. I was a Class 12 CST fellow, so I love this conference. I think there's so much great stuff happening, so thank you for choosing to attend our session today on oral health. I'm going to talk today about a methodology that we kind of came up with to target counties for need for school-based sealant programs in Florida, and then how we use ArcGIS Online to share the results with our partners. So I made my phone a hotspot, and I have some of the maps pulled up. I'm just going to go through the PowerPoint section, and then we'll attempt to bridge that technology gap and hopefully be able to show you guys some of the maps. So here's just a little bit of overview of presentation. Actually, a lot of what I had wanted to talk about, Don kind of already touched on, but this is just a brief overview. So as you guys know, oral health is really integral to overall health. I think there's movements nationally and in states to try to, you know, really incorporate oral health into a lot of our maternal and child health efforts and chronic disease efforts as well. So in Florida, we have the Public Health Dental Program. Our primary goal is to promote cost-effective community and school-based oral health education and preventive activities. We primarily do that through school-based sealant programs, which actually go to kids in the schools and deliver preventive dental services. We also do that through community water fluoridation. We're always trying to improve our numbers, but we're at 77%, so that looks really good compared to some of the other states. But as you guys know, community water fluoridation is actually adjusting public water supply with fluoride to reach the optimal level to prevent tooth decay. As we are kind of shifting how we provide care, we also have a teledentistry pilot that's going on in some of our counties for our county health departments. It's just thinking about another way that we can increase access to dental care and to get our kids connected to a dental home. We also provide technical assistance to a lot of our county health departments that expand their outreach projects to other at-risk populations such as WIC, Head Start, Early Head Start, and Early Learning coalitions. So untreated decay, as we know, is the most common chronic condition among children. It's also known as dental cavities or dental caries, and it's basically just when bacteria erodes your enamel of your teeth. And untreated tooth decay is really a problem in children and everyone, really, but because it can lead to pain, social avoidance, problems with speaking and eating, as well as there's a lot of research lately about school absence and poor school performance, and really what a true impact that oral health can have at such a young age on a child, their ability to perform and do well in school, and then obviously how that follows you throughout your whole life course and impacts your ability to live a full life. Nationally, we get this type of information from the National Health and Examination Survey, or NHANES, and the most recent survey in 2011-2012 says that 1 in 5 6 to 9-year-olds nationally have untreated decay. It's about 1 in 7 adolescents, so that's a lot of kids that are affected by this dental disease. In Florida, we measure this using the basic screening survey methodology that Don already touched on today, developed by the Association of State and Territorial Dental Directors. We've used this to measure untreated decay in third grade children, Head Start, Early Head Start, as well as older adults. We have a poster in the poster session on our older adult basic screening project, so if anyone is interested in doing one in their state or want to come talk to me about that, please visit the poster. We also can get this information from school-based sealant programs that participate in SEALS, which is a free Excel software offered through the CDC, and that's where they actually enter in child-level information, and it'll go ahead and collect and report on measures such as untreated decay for specific school-based sealant programs. So just clinically, what is a sealant? I'm not sure if everybody knows, but it's a thin plastic coating that's applied to the chewing surfaces of the teeth, and they've been shown to be very effective against preventing tooth decay and very cost-effective as well. And as I touched on earlier, obviously providing these services in a school reduce barriers to preventive dental care that a lot of children and adolescents face. And so by offering them right in the school, their missed school time is minimal and it's in a familiar environment to them. And so it's really, you know, a really adequate way to deliver preventive dental services. There has been some research recently. This report here that is referencing by Susan Griffin out of the CDC basically is just saying that the school-based sealant programs are truly cost-effective, I had some notes on that, but basically using school-based sealant programs to provide sealants to roughly 7 million low-income children who lack them could save up to $300 million in dental services. And so if you provide 1,000 children with sealants, it prevents the need for 485 dental fillings. And so basically, I mean, we know that prevention works, that it's cost-effective. I think the average national cost of a sealant is, and including, you know, the whole cost of it is $44 compared to upwards of $200 for a filling. So prevention makes sense and it's cost effective. So school-based sealant programs have been around for decades, and you know, various partners such as the CDC and the Association of State and Territorial Dental Directors have really been pushing this lately. In the Department of Health, they've been around since the 90s. We have good data from 2012 to present, so this is what this map shows here. The counties in orange are the ones that have a current program through our county health department. And so we actually just dropped down to 50, but so we're at 50 counties have a school-based sealant program. The ones that have a little bit of an overlay, which I apologize, it's hard to see here, were the programs that existed in 2012. And that was 27. So we've almost doubled our amount of county health departments that have school-based sealant programs over the past 5 years. And there are many factors that impact whether a school-based sealant program will be successful or not. In Florida in 2011, we had state statute that was passed that allows licensed dental hygienists to provide some preventive dental services in a health access setting. And they're allowed to do this without the prior examination, physical presence, or authorization of a dentist. So that's really allowed us to expand greatly across the state with getting kids in to see preventive dental services through the use of dental hygienists. We provide, as the state health office, we provide technical assistance to county health departments. They can request site visits for us, which assess quality improvement and recommend best practices and sustainability. As a state health office, we've also developed a data warehouse, which is serving as a data repository across the state for lots of different oral health indicators, including fluoridation. But one of the modules we have is a school-based sealant program module, and we're actually debuting it this summer. And it's going to be for all partners, so not only Department of Health or county health departments, but if there's any FQHC, university partners, sometimes schools just have school-based clinics and settings on their own. So we're really going to try to encourage all of our partners to use our database so that we have a more clear picture of what the school-based sealant programs are looking like across Florida. And then lastly, the delivery of care model. So the Department of Health really supports a dental hygiene workforce model. And again, we're able to do that because of our state statute. So that is dental hygienists that go out into the schools. That's good because paying a dental hygienist is much less than paying a dentist. They're able to adequately treat and you know, assess the child and refer them out to additional dental care if they need to. And it also alleviates or provides a workforce that then is less impact on the schools. Because a lot of times, you know, people are in schools are always like, we have too much going on. Our school nurses are already, you know, have way too much. They're overstretched. But by being able to pay a dental hygienist to go into a school, it kind of alleviates some of those worries about school-based sealant programs. So as I said, the primary goal of school-based sealant programs are to increase access to preventive dental care and then ultimately connect children to a dental home. In Florida, Title I public schools are usually our target population when establishing school-based sealant programs. I'm not sure if Don kind of touched on this a little bit with free and reduced lunch eligibility, but Title I is like a federal designation that schools can get, and it's based on the percentage of children that are from low-income families. And basically how it works is if you reach a certain percentage, then your whole school gets designated as Title I. And so in Florida, our new school-based sealant programs at the county level target Title I schools, not only because there's a high need for dental care there. We know that children from low-income families are twice as likely to have untreated decay. And also, because they're low-income, they're eligible for Medicaid. And so that helps a lot when we're establishing school-based sealant programs, thinking about things like sustainability and are you bringing enough services and reimbursement and billing to be able to continue to provide services in the future. We have over 4,000 public schools in Florida, and approximately 1,900 schools are Title I. That equates to about 44% of students in Florida are attending a Title I school. This map shows geographically what this looks like. So the darker pink are going to be higher percentage of students attending Title I schools in those counties. when we think about school-based sealant programs and school-based services in general, it's been a real priority our leadership-wise in the state and legislatively, because Florida has won three of the top 10 school districts in the country, Miami-Dade, Broward, and Hillsborough, which is the Tampa area. So whenever we think about implementing new school-based sealant programs or school health in general, it really has a lot. We can impact a lot of kids and really try to improve their health overall. Okay, so now onto the methods. So the goal was, there's a lot of conversations I was saying about school-based sealant programs, about school health in general. Actually, our governor had put in a $1.3 million budget for increasing school-based sealant programs, but unfortunately didn't make it into the House or the Senate. But we know there's a lot of interest in this area, so we wanted to try to think of a quantifiable way that we could target counties that could potentially receive funding in the future to initiate or expand school-based sealant programs. So the eight indicators that were chosen for this analysis and their data source are shown here. They kind of fall into two domains. One would be oral health status, and the other one is sustainability. So the first one I included was community water fluoridation, which again, we know access to community water fluoridation helps prevent tooth decay. I used untreated decay rate from both our third grade and our Head Start surveillance. We have Florida Youth Tobacco Survey, which is administered to middle school and high school students. That they ask questions about, have you been to a dentist, have you been to a doctor in the past year? And so we use no dental visit among 11 to 17 year olds to try to capture potential need in our older child population. We then use our data infrastructure to look at schools that are not currently being accessed by DOH school-based sealant programs. So there's a potential there to go into those counties where there's no DOH affiliated school-based sealant program right now. And potentially there, you know, that would be a sign of need if the department is not currently there. We included child population enrolled in Medicaid. That comes from our Agency for Healthcare Administration, students attending Title I schools, which comes from our Department of Education. And then I also included dental hygienist rate because of some of the things I touched on earlier, that we're promoting the dental hygiene model. And it's also a good kind of pulse check in the county. Like, do you have the workforce to support, you know, a new school-based sealant program? All right, and we're going to do the maps at the end. So what I did was I calculated, so for each county, we had the eight different indicators, and I calculated a Z-score for each of the indicators. As you guys know, Z-scores kind of compare where your county is compared to the average, and then it gives you a standardized score. And so then I averaged that across all the indicators. In doing this, each indicator was carried the same amount of weight or contributed the same to the final Z-score. And then we determined that the top quartile, so those at or above 75 percentile for the average Z-score, would be considered high need. And so in Florida, we have 67 counties, so the top quartile is going to be our roughly 16 counties. And for those of you that are familiar with AmCHIP and their Life Course Indicator initiative, I use the methodology from Concentrated Disadvantage, which looks at multiple different indicators at the census tract level and then summarizes Z-scores. So that was kind of my inspiration for doing this at the county level. So briefly, my methodology, I collected county level indicators and school data from various sources. I then calculated the summary Z-scores per county and stata. I used ArcMap 10.3.1, which is the actual desktop software, to bring in all my data and construct a map service. And then I used ArcGIS Online software to construct this interactive mapping application or website. At the Florida Department of Health, we're really lucky that we actually have an organizational account for ArcGIS Online. There's been a lot of interest in this over the past couple years, really trying to get more people in the department to use GIS. I would say personally, I have not really had a lot of experience with analyzing using GIS. I more do the analysis and then use GIS to geographically show and describe what we're doing. So these are some strengths and limitations that I found with using ArcGIS Online. I think it's more user-friendly for the analyst than ArcGIS desktop. It's a little kind of more like point and click, and I think it looks slightly more intuitive than the desktop version. Once it's shared, it's available to the public with a customizable link, which I'm going to show you guys later some examples of that. You can include a contextual information and map details, so in a lot of ways it can provide more information than a stagnant map can. It's easy to share drafts and contents with others in your organization. If you are lucky enough to have kind of an organizational account, it's really easy to share maps that you're working on with others. And they have several built-in templates, which make it really easy when you're importing data. You don't have to do a lot of formatting, and there's a lot of like cool things that are just built into ArcGIS Online. Some limitations that we found is that it still requires some computer literacy of the stakeholder to navigate an interactive map. And sometimes, depending on who you're working with, your literacy, computer literacy, may be low. You obviously need internet connectivity. I had to make my phone a hotspot in order to pull up the ArcGIS Online map, so it's not quite as tangible as a paper map, maybe. The map service still had to be created in ArcMap desktop and then brought into ArcMap GIS Online, so you needed both softwares to be able to make this kind of tool. Just as an aside, in ArcMap desktop, you can use patterns to kind of overlay and show different information. In ArcGIS Online, there's no patterns, so you just kind of have to think about how you display data a little bit differently. And then low printer functionality for creating stagnant maps. So while the ArcGIS Online looks really professional and it's a really cool kind of interactive tool to share, I think for us especially, there's still the need to kind of create stagnant maps. One for potentially, you know, sharing things on PowerPoints or stuff like that, but also, I mean, a lot of people just like to have hard copies of things. So the results, as I said, were 16 counties, which represented the 75th percentile, and their average Z-scores were considered high need. So of the 16 counties identified, there are mostly small rural counties. Half of them had existing Department of Health school-based sealant programs. And if school-based sealant programs were implemented in all of these 16 counties, it had the potential to impact 325 public schools. And then this is the map, which I will show you the interactive map, but basically those in red, highlighted in red, are the ones that were considered high need for school-based sealant programs. And so I guess the fact that of the 16, you know, half had school-based sealant programs and half didn't, I guess this would be like an okay way of measuring need, because it did identify some that don't currently have programs. All right, and then I'll just do a couple wrap-up slides before I show you guys the maps. But so this methodology really provided a quantifiable way to identify counties that may be in high need for school-based sealant program initiation or expansion. However, there are really many reasons for success or failure of school-based sealant programs, and those really lie at the local level. So thus, a more depth analysis is really needed to determine if the counties that I highlighted are truly good candidates for school-based sealant program. Some of the things to think about are your existing partners at the local level, including oral health coalitions and dental providers, as well as are there other people working on school-based sealant programs in that community or in that county? I mentioned earlier we have some counties that are primarily served by FQHCs or by our university partners, so you just have to be aware of what other entities are working towards increasing access to kids through schools in the county. Also, the location of the county, is there urban versus rural, local level priorities, including funding priorities, funding availability, and then lastly, the local dental workforce. So are there dental hygienists or dentists that are able to oversee the implementation of these programs? So our conclusions are that the number of school-based sealant programs has significantly increased over the past 3 years. I think that's really attributed to that state statute I mentioned earlier. We also use Title V Maternal and Child Health Block Grant every year to fund counties that don't have a school-based sealant program. That gives them the money to hire a dental hygienist, to purchase the portable equipment, things like that. And so, but obviously efforts should continue until all children have access to preventive care. As I said, we target Title I, but really, you know, all kids everywhere are going to need dental services. And then using ArcGIS Online, create a data visualization tool that could be shared publicly.